On this 28th day of February 2011 in San Diego, we are reading from the Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We are near the end of chapter 18 called The Perfection of Renunciation. And I believe we're at 77.
76.
Is it 76? Okay. Reading 1876. Rajan Sangsmritya Sangsmritya Samvadam Imam Adbhutam Keshavarjuna Yopunyam Rishyami Chamahumahu. O King, as I repeatedly recall this wondrous and holy dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, I take pleasure, being thrilled at every moment. Purport. The understanding of the Bhagavad Gita is so transcendental that anyone who becomes conversant with the topics of Arjuna and Krishna becomes righteous, and he cannot forget such talks. This is the transcendental position of spiritual life. In other words, one who hears the Gita from the right source, directly from Krishna, attains full Krishna consciousness. The result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill, not only for some time, but at every moment. Om Jnanatamarandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Unmilitam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkness of ignorance. My spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, opened my eyes with the torchlight of knowledge. I offer my humble obeisances unto him and all members of Sri Parampara. So this is, we are witnessing Sanjay's ecstasy at recalling the conversation between Arjuna and Krishna, which we just read, the Bhagavad Gita. And this repetition is indicative of high emotion. When you see repetition here, Sangsmitya, Muhu Muhu, and it's again the next verse, the same thing. He's ecstatically remembering. Rishyami, his hairs are standing on end. And just from the mercy of his Gurudev, Vyasadev, he was able to hear this because they were at a distance. He, by his mystic power, he was able to listen in on this conversation. And he's appreciating the wonder of it. Now, one of the words here is punyam. Punyam is describes, of course, it means piety. And this is commonly used to describe any talks about Krishna. Ashunvatam sakata Krishna punya shravana kirtana. In the second chapter, first canon, we find this verse, Srila Prabhupada quoted all the time, that just by hearing about Krishna, Ashunvatam sakata Krishna, that Krishna himself, in the heart, he cleanses away the abhadras, those things which are inauspicious, lust, anger, greed, modes of nature. And in this word, the punya shravana kirta means that just these vibrations, when heard from the right source, in the right attitude, bring piety automatically to the listener. This is the great power of Krishna katha. In fact, this is the real means of advancement in this age especially, is mostly to hear and chant the holy name and other pure vibrations. In this age, we don't have facility for very, very elaborate deity worship, although we try our best. What to speak of elaborate Vedic sacrifices? How long can we really meditate? These are the Yuga Dharmas in previous ages. But we have a great facility for hearing and chanting. We've been given a wealth of genuine scripture, and of course, the Hare Krishna mantra, and other names of Krishna that we can take full shelter of. And just by absorbing ourselves in that sound vibration, and piety comes, means that your character changes. You become, as described in these verses, in the second chapter, it describes nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavatitta mashoke bhakti bhavati naishtiki. By thus regularly serving the Bhagavatam, now, this is specifically describing hearing the Bhagavad Purana, but also serving the pure devotee. Everything inauspicious in the heart is destroyed almost to nil. Abhadras, the abhadras. What are these abhadras? I mentioned a few of them. This is our absorption in the material energy, our attraction for it, our fears aligned with it, anxieties, passions. All of these things are compacted in the heart, and it's been going on for lifetimes. So we have these inauspicious things that we carry forward from lifetime to lifetime. But all of it is cleansed away by this powerful process of hearing and chanting. And Krishna himself within the heart, the Prabhupada points out, I heard a lecture recently where he says, this nominative case means that Krishna is the subject of this verse. He's acting, vidunoti suditsatam, because he's very affectionate toward his devotee. Suditsatam means your best friend. In English we have this word, the bosom buddy. You know, someone who's really your best friend, you know, you would trust your life with, you know. So Krishna is that best friend of each one of us. Sudit Satam, compacted in the heart. And he always has our welfare at heart. So when he sees someone hearing nicely, just like if we can hear the Bhagavad Gita, we're going to start again. We go round and round. It says here, muhu muhu, again and again. You know, he's been calling again and again. So we're going again and again. We've been through several times already since I got here. We'll start again. It's ever fresh. This is the distinguishing quality of a transcendental vibration, Krishna Katha, Hari Katha, is that it doesn't get stale. Anyone who's, you know, the chanting of Hare Krishna, sometimes the mind is wandering, it's fighting the mantra, but if you really can surrender to it and become absorbed, you'll see that it never gets stale. The other night, we went to the Namaste Yoga Center, we were chanting, and we were going on for a few hours there. You know, very sweet kirtan. The other bar sang one, and the other devotees. And, you know, I mean, eventually you have to stop and take rest and go. But it was fresh. The last mantra was as fresh as the first, for me anyway. You know, it is something about this sound. It's because Krishna is ever fresh. Spirit does not get stale. Similarly, the words of the Gita are not like ordinary words. As I pointed out recently, you know, what part of this, you know, of the book can really be dated? Even though it's spoken 5,000 years ago, the topics, the substance of the book is eternally relevant to every one of us. You know, who is not interested in his fate? How we're living in this world? Why are we suffering? How we can end the suffering? That's not bounded by time or place or geography or anyone. You know, it's eternally pertinent. And here's Krishna speaking and giving us the invaluable information of how we can perfect our lives. You know, it's always going to be fresh. So this is a very nice verse describing the appreciation of Sanjay, who has heard it for the first time and is just ecstatic in hearing it. And then the word samvada. Samvada means a conversation. We heard this morning. You know, you can connect the morning to the evening. It's one of these. Satam prasangam mamavirya samvido. The word samvido is the same word. It means conversation. It means vibrations and shared by, you know, great devotees, you know, or the Lord himself and his great devotee. So to be a witness to that should be very enlivening. And even if it's not immediately, as you know, we're not as ecstatic as Sanjay, still the purification is going on. So in this verse from the third canto that Srila Prabhupada was speaking on this morning in our lecture, he's talking about how Kapila is giving instructions to his mother. And he's talking about the same thing, really, that within the community of sadhus, satam prasangam, means an intense, serious association, not superficial, one can hear my glories, mama virya samvido, you know, and which includes instructions of Krishna, the activities, everything. And that produces a ritkan or a sayana katha. This katha is like a great elixir, life-giving elixir, for the heart and for the ear. This is what he says. Bhavanti, it produces. And this is a path. This is yoga. He says in the next verse, this is the easiest kind of yoga. You're all producing, you're performing yoga here. You know? I'm hearing Krishna's words, I'm just repeating what I've heard. So it's the same thing. This is the easiest type of yoga. And what happens? What is it?
Tad-doshana.
Engaging in this activity, employing it, ashu upavargavash, quickly on this path of liberation. this Abhavarga Vartmani. This is the way out of this, enmeshing, entangling world, is to hear, mostly hear and then chant, and repeat, think, and obey, the instructions. So one quickly develops faith, shraddha, raddhi, attraction, and finally bhakti, or pure devotion for the Lord. This is the basic principle. So the Gita is our foundational book. It has all of everything in seed form. It's the ABCs, but it's complete in itself. And it's meant to be read every day. And you get deeper and deeper understanding of it. So this conversation, which is very wonderful, between Krishna and Arjun, is bringing Sanjay ecstasy, and it can bring us enlightenment too. Okay, any other questions? Any questions or comments on this particular verse?
Bhavanti Hrit Karna Rasayan Katha. Gopi Parandan Prabhu was there. He had an interesting take on it. Rasayan can also be understood as medicine. It says medicine for the heart delivered through the ear.
Through the ear, that's right.
And also he had Anukramishyati. He mentioned Anukramishyati has a meaning that it follows these three things in that order.
Shraddha, Rati, and Bhakti.
Yeah, like
yes.
Milestones that you will see as you progress.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so many levels you can understand this. The heart, we have this heart disease. Not the heart isn't working properly, but it's described at the end of the Rasa dance, the very end. He says, Vikriditamba devaduvaditam to Vishnu, Shraddhan vato anashunayara devardiyedya, Bhaktim badam. Bhagavati patilabda kama ridrogam asha pahanot achirena dira. That we have this kama ridrogam, which means the disease of the heart known as lust, material desire. But listening to the rasa dance, which is the essence of the 10th canto, Krishna's lila, from the right source, understanding that it's Vishnu. It's nice he puts it, this is Vishnu's, this is God's activity. With faith from the right source and repeating that, this will quickly cure this heart disease and one will attain the highest levels of devotion. So this is true of all the vibrations that are directly related to Krishna, his instructions, his lila, the avatars, the devotees. Today is the disappearance of Ishwar Puri, great devotee who took the role of Lord Chaitanya's guru. He was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Most famous, perhaps, for being there at the very end, taking care of his menial tasks and encouraging him. And you got the full blessings of Madhavendra Puri. So all of this, coming through the ear is our main means of purification. And if we constantly keep it up, if we're constantly hearing, chanting, and keeping in touch with the sound vibration, we'll be protected. It will be protected from the influence of the modes of nature, from the very powerful instance of this age. And that's why ultimately Lord Chaitanya says, Kirtaniya Sadahari. One should always be chanting, the glories of the Lord. And then you'll be on the pure platform. Any further comment? We can go on. Yes, go ahead. They have to be purified. A relationship with a person, whether it's a husband or a wife or a child or whatever, we have to use that, purify that relationship by putting Krishna in the center. In other words, the greatest thing we can do, say for our children, we love them, we want to help them and to grow and to prosper in this world. But if you simply try to satisfy their desires, which are always changing, every mother knows that, well, you can't do that, because they don't know what's best for themselves. They'll eat all sweets, they'll watch TV all night, they would, whatever. So there has to be boundaries, So you're giving the best thing. So the best thing you can do for them is to introduce Krishna into their lives as much as possible. And this is the best way of purifying every relationship. So, and that way the attachments means those attachments that are purely based on our ego or a sense of self separate from Krishna, those have to be purified or given up. And it's not easy because the basic principle in, family life is to expand kind of a sense of separateness, you know, that we're, you know, we have our own little domain, and we have our, this is mine and this is not mine, and so forth. So it, that's why there's a gradual process by which one can gradually purify everything. That for householders, it's important to as much as possible make one's home into a temple. That Krishna is there. What's on the wall? What are the sounds being vibrated? You know, how do we restructure our lives so that we have a time together where we're worshiping Krishna? You know, and children are very malleable if they hear this. I heard, you know, Sergio was bringing his niece around, you know, and this girl is chanting 10 rounds already.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
10 rounds. She went out on Harinam, you know, she went to that Namaste Yoga Center. She was with us, you know.
Karen.
And, you know, because she's lucky to have Sergio and he's encouraging her, so she's picking up on it, you know. Kids can be... So this is how the attachments can be used, can be sublimated, if you will, so that it helps you become Krishna conscious and helps those who you're related to become Krishna conscious. It's very important to try to do that. It's a whole science, you know, it's involved, but we can talk about it.
You gave an Indian name also, Kiran.
Kirana. Kirana means like a ray of the sun.
Krishna Kiran.
Okay, let's go on. Tatcha samsmritya
samsmritya
rupamatyadbhutam hare vismayo me mahan rajan rishyami chapunak punaha. So another sign that he's in ecstasy is he's repeating himself from verse to verse. You can see. Again, remembering. O king, so the king, of course, is Dhritarashtra. This is the beginning of the book, you remember. O king, as I remember the wonderful form of Lord Krishna, I am struck with wonder more and more, and I rejoice again and again. Purport. It appears that Sanjaya also, by the grace of Vyas, could see the universal form Krishna exhibited to Arjuna. It is, of course, said that Lord Krishna had never exhibited such a form before. It was exhibited to Arjuna only, yet some great devotees could also see the universal form of Krishna when it was shown to Arjuna. And Vyas was one of them. He is one of the great devotees of the Lord, and he is considered to be a powerful incarnation of Krishna. Vyas disclosed this to his disciple Sanjaya, who remembered that wonderful form of Krishna, the wonderful form of Krishna exhibited to Arjuna and enjoyed it repeatedly. So this is the, what is this? The rupam, ati adbhutam rupam. So this is indicative. This is why he's talking about the universal form. Now for devotees, and Srila Prabhupada makes it very clear in that chapter, the universal form is not so important. You don't, you know, we don't meditate on it so much. But it's a very good, as described in the second canto, first step in God realization. The idea is that, and I point this out because we're right, you know, we live it every day in which we find that science, you know, and we live in a science-saturated culture. Technology, science is always some new thing. I just read that some guy invented by genetic manipulation, what do they call it, genetic engineering, that he has this bacterium now that can produce supposedly diesel fuel. Diesel fuel, you know. And he's going to harvest that, and this will be revolutionary and change everything, you know. So every day there's something like that. Or you're reading about something that's gotten out of control, you know, that they thought they had together, and now is causing havoc. You know, even Google, you know, suddenly lost everybody's email, you know. Anyone who's going to leave their email on Google, you know, hard drives has got to be... gets what he deserves. But the point is, you know, this seems to be what's in control. The idea, these wonders of material energy, of material science, make people forget the wonders of God. You know, they're not interested. That's old-fashioned. That doesn't matter, you know. So this kind of, so chapter 11 is for us, you know, who are you know, enamored of all of these wonders of nature. Here's something wonderful. You know, Krishna is showing this universal form. And indeed, when you just contemplate some of the glory of Krishna, you know, I was always taken with the idea, somehow or other, this struck me when I first read it, you know, in the Bhagavad Gita, I think it's in the introduction, that Krishna, you know, through the Super Soul, his agency, he knows everything. He knows everything, past, present, and future. Every thought you're having, every act you're doing, you know, That somehow just takes my breath away, that someone, some in, you know, an individual, a person can know that, you know, when our knowledge is so obviously limited and we're feeling ignorant, you know. And then, you know, the creation itself, you just contemplate it, that there's an intelligence that has engineered this whole creation and everything is moving so wonderfully. You know, this is the divine vision, to see the hand of God in every little thing that's happening in this world. That it begins in chapter 7 with that. I'm the light of the sun, the light of the moon. I'm the taste of water, the fragrance in the earth. All, everything is moving by me, you know. So this is a wonderful aspect of Krishna. It's very awe-inspiring. And that's particularly what Sanjaya is thinking of in this verse. Now, devotees, we want to move beyond that. We're trying to cultivate a personal relationship with Krishna, which is way beyond this awe and reverence. In fact, when you read the Chaitanya Charitamrita, you'll see that Krishna really derides that. He says, those who are, you know, worshipping me in awe and reverence, he basically says it kind of bores me. You know, he's not so, when my mother chastises me because I stole some butter, that steals my mind away from the hymns of the Vedas. You know, he much prefers that. Because this is an intimate relationship of love. The other is just like, you know, just imagine, you know, if you were always being worshipped by everybody, you know, how can you have a friend? You know, how can you just talk about something and have some interview, you know, go for a drink of sweet rice, you know, together or something, you know what I'm saying? You can't do that. Oh, I'm being worshipped, I'm all powerful, they're trembling in fear of me. That's not so pleasing to Krishna, you know. So that Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, leads to that. It's a much more advanced and attractive platform. This is why we worship Krishna in the flute, in the forest of Vrindavan, you know, in his most delightful Kaishora form, where he hides this glory, where he hides the glory, and so that the sweetness can come out, the all-attractive. That's why it's Krishna that we worship, and not, you know, Narayan, Mahavishnu, and so forth. They're worshipable, don't get me wrong. But that's a certain mood that's very basic. You know, we should. It's a little difficult to understand how, because we need to understand that we're very insignificant and we're just servants of God. You know, that's a basic platform. You can't try to jump up to this other thing. But still, we keep in our eye, because we're seeing Krishna every day in the most sweet form. You know, that sense of service, you know, which is basic, and which is, you know, the foundation of our bhakti, that matures into a more intimate relationship. That's where we're headed. You know, you can keep that in view, but we have to go step by step. That's the anukramishyati, you know. And the first step is understanding the basics, that we're just infinitesimal spirit souls. We're overwhelmed now by our conditioning, by the agency of the material energy in the three modes of nature. And in order to come out of illusion and come into reality, we have to understand our actual constitutional position as eternal servants of Krishna. That's who we are. And then begin acting on that, under the guidance of, you know, spiritual master and experienced persons on the path. And then these other things gradually awaken in us, these other understandings of Krishna as our best friend, as our intimate, well-wisher, and all of these things quickly develops. But this particular verse, he's remembering the universal form, which is fine. That's one understanding. But it's basically, Prabhupada says, why did he show the universal form? So that nobody could fake being God. You know, in this age, there's so many fake gods. You know, show me a universal form. You know, this is what Prabhupada says. Yeah, right, you know. They can't even, get a toothache. Prabhupada said they got to run to the dentist, and that's supposed to be God, you know. But people fall for that because they don't know. So Prabhupada, he wrote these books so that people will know what's the real standard, you know. Okay. Any other comment? Otherwise, we'll wind it up here. Last verse. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna. Yatra Pato Dhanurdharaha. Tatra Sri Vijayo Bhutir. Dhuvan Nitir Matir Mama. Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, and wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will also certainly be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That is my opinion. Purport. The Bhagavad Gita began with an inquiry of Dhritarashtra's. He was hopeful of the victory of his sons, assisted by great warriors like Bhishma, Drona, and Karna. He was hopeful that the victory would be on his side, but after describing the scene on the battlefield, Sanjaya told the king, "You are thinking of victory, but my opinion is that where Krishna and Arjuna are present, there will be all good fortune." Sanjaya, directly confirmed that Dhritarashtra could not expect victory for his side. Victory was certain for the side of Arjuna because Krishna was there. Krishna's acceptance of the post of the charioteer for Arjuna was an exhibition of another opulence. Krishna is full of all opulences, and renunciation is one of them. There are many instances of such renunciation, for Krishna is also the master of renunciation. The fight was actually between Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. Arjuna was fighting on behalf of his elder brother, Yudhishthira. Because Krishna and Arjuna were on the side of Yudhishthira, Yudhishthira's victory was certain. The battle was to decide who would rule the world, and Sanjaya predicted that the power would be transferred to Yudhishthira. It is also predicted here that Yudhishthira, after gaining victory in this battle, would flourish more and more, because not only was he righteous and pious, but he was also a strict moralist. He never spoke a lie during his life. There are many less intelligent persons who take the Bhagavad Gita to be a discussion of topics between two friends on a battlefield. But such a book cannot be scripture. Some may protest that Krishna incited Arjuna to fight, which is immoral. But the reality of the situation is clearly stated. The Bhagavad Gita is the supreme instruction in morality. The supreme instruction of morality is stated in the 9th chapter, in the 34th verse, Man mana bhava man bhakta. One must become a devotee of Krishna, and the essence of all religion is to surrender unto Krishna. Sarva dharman parityajya mame kang sharanam vraja. The instructions of the Bhagavad Gita constitute the supreme process of religion and of morality. All other processes may be purifying and may lead to this process. But the last instruction of the Gita is the last word in all morality and religion. Surrender unto Krishna. This is the verdict of the 18th chapter. From the Bhagavad Gita we can understand that to realize oneself by philosophical speculation and by meditation is one process, but to fully surrender unto Krishna is the highest perfection. This is the essence of the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. The path of regulative principles according to the orders of social life and according to the different courses of religion may be a confidential path of knowledge. But although the rituals of religion are confidential, meditation and cultivation of knowledge are still more confidential. And surrender unto Krishna in devotional service in full Krishna consciousness is the most confidential instruction. That is the essence of the 18th chapter. Another feature of the Bhagavad Gita is that the actual truth is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. The absolute truth is realized in three features, impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and ultimately the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Perfect knowledge of the absolute truth means perfect knowledge of Krishna. If one understands Krishna, then all the departments of knowledge are part and parcel of that understanding. Krishna is transcendental, for he is always situated in his eternal internal potency. The living entities are manifested of his energy and are divided into two classes, eternally conditioned and eternally liberated. Such living entities are innumerable, and they are considered fundamental parts of Krishna. Material energy is manifested into 24 divisions. The creation is effected by eternal time, and it is created and dissolved by external energy. This manifestation of the cosmic world repeatedly becomes visible and invisible. In the Bhagavad Gita, five principal subject matters have been discussed: the Supreme Personality of Godhead, material nature, the living entities, eternal time, and all kinds of activities. All is dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. All conceptions of the Absolute Truth, impersonal Brahman, localized Paramatma, and any other transcendental conception, exist within the category of understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Although superficially the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the living entity, material nature, and time appear to be different, nothing is different from the Supreme. But the Supreme is always different from everything. Lord Chaitanya's philosophy is that of inconceivable oneness and difference. This system of philosophy constitutes perfect knowledge of the Absolute Truth. The living entity in his original position is pure spirit. He is just like an atomic particle of the Supreme Spirit. Thus Lord Krishna may be compared to the sun and the living entities to sunshine. Because the living entities are the marginal energy of Krishna, they have a tendency to be in contact either with the material energy or with the spiritual energy. In other words, the living entity is situated between the two energies of the Lord, and because he belongs to the superior energy of the Lord, he has a particle of independence. By proper use of that independence, he comes under the direct order of Krishna. Thus he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports to the 18th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita in the matter of its conclusion, the perfection of renunciation. So this purport is quite rich. Srila Prabhupada is summarizing the lessons of the Gita. Notice that they're speaking about these five subject matters. This comes up in the introduction also. I'm sure Prabhupada is quoting from Baladeva Vijayabhushan's commentary, which formed a large part of the basis of these purports. And if you recall, we have the Ishvara, the Lord, the Jiva, time, and activities, or karma, and the material energy. These are the basic subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita. And all of them are eternal except for karma. Karma can be destroyed, can be finished. We don't have to keep performing karma. But the living entity and the Lord are certainly eternal. And Prakriti is also eternal, although it sometimes is manifest and sometimes is not. And there are different categories of Prakriti. There's, yeah.
What about time?
Time is also eternal in the sense of just as the material energy is eternal, it's manifest in some, and unmanifest.
But time is also... Because it's an energy in the spiritual world.
Right. But it's because the material energy is eternal, so the time that's Krishna's energy. Time I am. So it's manifest, but it doesn't appear when there's no material manifestation. But karma is something that we don't, you know, can have a beginning and an end. You know, there's no karma in the spiritual world in the sense of a reaction, you know, fruit of activity. So the whole idea of the Bhagavad Gita is to delineate these five subject matters and give us instruction how that we can work within these relationships to get out of the grip of the material energy and to come under the influence of the internal energy. The internal energy is not so much delineated here, but we learn from the Chaitanya Charitamrita that the whole, you know, spiritual world is conducted by these internal energies of Krishna. Under three basic categories of Ladini, Sandini, and Samvit. The Ladini Shakti is personified as Srimati Radharani. When Prabhupada mentions here at the end, thus he attains his normal condition in the pleasure-giving potency, it means under the influence of Radharani. You know, all of the service is really, you know, is being conducted through her because she's the most delightful consort of Krishna, she who gives Krishna the pleasure. She's his pleasure-giving energy. Love personified. She's the love of Krishna personified. So, and the things in the spiritual world, they're under the conduct of the Sandini potency.
Balaram
is overseeing that. And then there's the Samvit potency, the knowledge potency. And that conducts, you know, the knowledge of the Leela and the different things. So there's a whole world there. That's the eternal world. It's always manifest. Yeah, it's always existing. This world comes and goes. This is a reflection. Reflection of something is may come and go, but the thing itself stays, you see. So the whole point of the Gita and the whole point of our philosophy is to give us a way in which we can smoothly and step by step extricate ourselves, be extricated and brought forward from the thrall or control of the material energy into the influence of the internal spiritual energy, which is our natural position. And, you know, this chapter, well, let's just go through this purport now because it's quite detailed. So first thing is, you know, the situation there, they're on a battlefield. So wherever there's Krishna, there's going to be victory, you see? And there's going to be victory, opulence, and morality and power. So that morality part is so important, you know? Just think about this Kali Yuga, you know, I've been alive for so many decades, you know, aware of history. What is the 20th century, you know, or the whole, you know, thousands of years? It's just one battle after another. Where is the morality in those battles, you know? Okay, the good war, you know, Hitler was evil personified and we conquered him, you know. Great, you know. But then is America really the paragon of morality now? We won the war with a superpower, you know. What was the foundation of this country, this nation? Genocide. The Indians. You know, we're claiming this is our land. You know, and Prabhupada makes 100 times. He says, Krishna owns everything. When you delineate a portion of it, this is mine, I can do what I want with it, you're stealing, you know, Krishna's power. There's no morality there. Ultimately, there's no ethics and morality without reference to Krishna. There has to be a lodestone, a source, a pramana, evidence that is immovable. And that is, you know, Krishna's words, which come as the Vedas and the Bhagavad Gita, like that. That this is right and this is wrong. You know, Krishna talks about that. So anything which is based on the false ego, under the modes of nature, whether it's individual self, family, or nation, you know, nationality, it's all simply, you know, a part of the ignorance. And ultimately, it's sinful. And so, morality means just like this idea, you know, to have a society, you know, just imagine it, you know, a society which everyone is concerned with everyone else's welfare, you know, that's their top concern, that's the spiritual world, that's a spiritual life, that's real morality, and that's what happens when you have a group of people become Krishna conscious. They become concerned with Krishna's welfare and the welfare of his devotees, you know, which is everybody else. And those who are potential devotees. In other words, everyone else. This is the real mood of, this is the saintly mood. Self-sacrifice. This chapter is called The Perfection of Renunciation. So the ultimate perfection of renunciation is very simple. To renounce one's own separate interests, you know, maintain the body minimally, and to be thinking of the welfare of Krishna and his parts and parcels, and those who, you know, haven't discovered Krishna yet. That's the greatest benefit in the world, you know. That's real devotional life. So, I was thinking of Prahlad's prayer to Lord Nrisimhadev, which I don't know the Sanskrit for. It's Svasjastu Vishvasa Kalak Pasidatam. May everyone practice Krishna consciousness, because then their demonic mentality will be pacified, and they will think of each other's welfare. This is the essence of morality. Is it for me? Is it my own selfish thing? Or is it for the good of all? You know. So Krishna is for the good of all. He's not at all. He has no stake in it personally. He's here speaking to Arjuna. He's coming. Yadayadahi dharmasya. Right? Glanir, when there's the dharma becomes confused or there's sin. He's coming for the benefit of the world. For the world. He's perfectly happy in the spiritual world. And in fact, his pastimes continue there. But he does. He takes the trouble to come to a place where there's all these enemies he has to kill. You know, I mean, it's enlivening to the devotees, you know, to that on that level. But really, he's doing it out of his love for us, and so is Yudhishthir. You know, he's taking on this trouble. And if you read the Bhagavatam, you see what anxiety he went through, because he was on one side, and all these kings got killed. He felt terrible about it. This bloodbath that took place. On his account, he was distraught. You know, you don't think Duryodhana would have been distraught. You know, it doesn't bother them. You know, but it bothered Yudhishthira, and he had to be preached to by Krishna and Bhima. You know, Bhishma. You know, gave him so much instruction and encouraged him to take up the role of the king for everyone's welfare. You know, this is the soft heart. This is why Arjuna can't fight. You know, he's a warrior. But he's not a demon. He's not a callous, you know, tormentor. You know, he's a devotee. And so his soft heart is affected by this, and he has to be encouraged. This is for everyone's welfare. You know, it seems counterintuitive. Yes, killing them, it's for their welfare, because I'm here, because Krishna speaking, because you know, he's there. So everyone is benefited, even those who get killed. You know, what to speak of the whole world is benefited. So therefore, there will certainly be victory. You know, Krishna ultimately. This is another thing. You know, that we have to have faith in, because you know this movement. When you look at the history, it started from nothing. Nothing but, you know, Srila Prabhupada's faith, you know, and the order of his spiritual master. But materially, it looked like a hopeless cause. It's really a battlefield. You know, Prabhupada came on a battlefield. And what did he have? You know, he didn't even have hardly any books. He had the holy name, he had his great faith. But he was there with Krishna. He had Krishna. And in a short amount of years, 45 years, which is a blink of an eye, you know, Krishna's all over the world. These books have been translated into so many, you know, this temple is going up. The movement has its ups and downs when we deviate, but the power is there in Krishna. So similarly, in so many times when the Pandavas, they escaped from the house of Lack. It's a lack. It's not shellac. It's lack. I looked it up. Lack is this hard substance that they make shellac out of that's very flammable. It's the word lack. So this house of Lack, and you know, there was a conspiracy to burn him alive. That's who they were facing. Where was the morality on the other side? None. All kinds of nefarious ways to kill them as children. You know, they try, and you know, cowardly. You know, to burn the family alive like that. So they escape from that. They're in the forest, right? And they have no army. They have no money. You know, they're just running. Bhima is carrying everybody. They're exhausted, right, into the forest. They meet this demon, Hidimba. Bhima has to get, you know, so everything seemed lost, you know. But they never lost their faith in Krishna. Kunti, the princess, is lying on the ground. You know, Bhima's heart is breaking. He sees his wonderful mother. Princess lying on the cold ground in the forest, you know. But they underwent it, and they never lost their faith. And at her prayers at the end there, in the eighth chapter, I think it is, first canto, one, you know, wonderful prayers where she's remembering these things. And then what does she say? You know, this is the exaltation of the devotees, that despite all the blackest, you know, reverses, they don't lose their faith in Krishna, and ultimately they're triumphant. But she's saying, oh, that intensity of remembering you that was brought about by all those dangers and all of that, those reverses, I want that again. You know, now we have the kingdom, you're leaving us. So she says, Vipaduk Santutaksha Swatatva Jagad Guru Bhavatu Darshanam Yaksara Puna Bhavadarshanam. Beautiful prayer. It's not easy to utter this prayer. I haven't been able to do it. You know, she's saying that, let those dangers come again and again. Let's put us into all kinds of dangers. Because by those dangers, we will see you. Meaning that we will intensely pray to you and we'll feel you even more close to us than I do now seeing you. You see, the whole idea is that the intensity of the mood in which you're approaching Krishna, that's what produces the ecstasy. So she's saying, we'll see your feet. In other words, we'll feel your presence of your lotus feet. And by seeing those feet, we won't see birth and death again. It's very poetic. Bhavatu darshanam yaksat apunar bhava darshanam. So, we need to have that faith that Krishna can empower us to practice Krishna consciousness. Krishna can make all the arrangements so that our life will be auspicious for Krishna consciousness. Even the reverses, the seeming obstacles that we face in our path to be Krishna conscious are also blessings, because they allow us to strengthen our spiritual muscles. You know, the great devotees, they seek out those things. They seek out the difficulties. They welcome these challenges because they give them a chance to be closer to Krishna and show how much they love Krishna. So that's Sanjay is giving this conclusive verse here, that the pure devotee, Arjuna, where he's present and wherever Krishna is present, due to the pure devotee's desire, there will ultimately be victory, there will be morality, there will be success, and there will be opulence. And so we can have faith in that too, even though we may not see it right away in our lives. But if we have faith and practice nicely, then it'll come true. Okay, what should we do? It's 8:10 already. Okay, so tomorrow we'll have a review of this chapter. And then on Wednesday, chapter 1. Well, I think what we do is we go through the intro. The introduction is very rich. That takes actually several weeks. And again and again, ever fresh. So actually, before we end, we have a few minutes. Let's see. Ishwar Puri. So there's this wonderful, wonderful pastime. First of all, the whole pastime of how Lord Chaitanya, you know, he took initiation from him. You know, he showed by his example. Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. But just as Krishna also went to Sandipani Muni school, right, and studied under a teacher, went to Gurukul, and showed by example how that. So Lord Chaitanya also, he took initiation from Ishwar Puri. And this was really the beginning of how he revealed his position as the supreme devotee. In Lord Chaitanya's earlier days, he was taking the position of a great scholar. And he would argue with the devotees. He would try to defeat them on the path. It was almost a game. And they would meet him on, you know, in the road. They would try to avoid him sometimes. You know, he says, oh, that Nimai Pandit, he's so wonderful, so powerful, so intelligent and attractive. If only he would be a great devotee. So Shivastaka would tell him, if you only would be a great devotee, you know, you would be the greatest devotee. Don't worry about this nyaya, this logic chopping back and forth, you know. And Lord Chaitanya would laugh, so by your blessings of the great devotees, I will become a devotee, you know, like that. So he went to Gaya. I think it was at Gaya that he saw Ishwar Puri.
His father's studying Vaishnava or something.
Yes. But then Ishwar Puri also came to Navadvip, and Lord Chaitanya surrendered. He served him like a menial servant, doing his laundry every day, you know. And this is, it showed a way in which to approach the guru. And so he took initiation. In the line from Madhavendra Puri, this Ishwar Puri had gotten such favor from Madhavendra Puri because in his final state, final days, he was taking care of his menial, you know, tasks that needed to be done. And by contrast, you know, there was the Ramchandra Puri, who was another disciple who was didn't pick up on the mood. Madhavendra Puri was chanting his special verse. You know, these things you discover when you read Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I highly recommend. This is Madhavendra Puri's famous verse, and then, you know, this is the Kaustubha Mani gem of all verses. The more you chant it, the more you realize. So I said, well, what is that verse? So here's the verse he was chanting. Aidina dayada nata he matara nata kadava loka se vidhyam tvada loka katadam tayata brahma tikinkaro miham. You know, Ishwar Puri is right there, you know, and Ramchandra Puri comes. So what does the verse mean? Said, oh, my dear Lord, this is in the mood of Radharani. He's chanting, my dear Lord, you are Aidina Dayada Nata, O Master of Mathura. So she's in Vrindavan, he's in Mathura, he's gone. You're Dina Dayada Nata, means that you're melting with mercy or compassion for the most wretched. I'm the most wretched now because you've abandoned me. Mathura Nata, Kadava Lokise, when will I see you again? Due to my not seeing you, my heart has become very unsteady and weak. What shall I do now? You know, just it's lament. It's very heartfelt lament. It's chanting again and again. So this Ramchandra Puri comes and he says, oh, what are you lamenting for? You should be thinking of Brahman. You should be on the Brahmaputra platform by now, you know. So he's telling his guru, he's his disciple. So the mantra is, get out of my face. He says, if I see your face at the time of death, I don't know what's going to happen to me. You know, he's entering in this mood of deep separation from Krishna. He didn't understand. So this Ramchandra Puri later became, he lost his devotional creeper. He was crushed and he was criticizing Lord Chaitanya. You know, he became a great offender. But that's another pastime. But by contrast, Ishwar Puri was, you know, very solicitous, got all the mercy, and he was able to take the role of spiritual master of Lord Chaitanya. So it's a very exalted soul. We can remember him now, today's disappearance day. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.